This episode is a two-part episode. If you enjoyed part one, please come back next week, Wednesday morning, for part two.
We're traveling through an MSR, main supply route. It was washed out due to the rainy season. And then during that rainy season, we take an ASR, which is your alternate supply route. And there's several of them out there. And then all of a sudden, that's like when we hit the IED, it was like 175 pounds.
Holy shit.
Which typically like would level, well, not typically, it will take an entire highway out.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners, homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
In this episode, we have Devin Fink and Brittany Litz. Devin is a medically retired Army veteran whose journey through combat, injury, and recovery has led him to start a successful dog training business, Canine Services by Devin, but also to establish Frontline Companions along with Brittany Litz and her husband. It is a 501c3 nonprofit serving veterans and first responders. Brittany is the vice president of Frontline Companions. From training, therapy, and service dogs to mentorship and nonprofits, Devin and Brittany embody doing the hard right thing. Devin and Brittany, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having us. We definitely appreciate you and all your content and stuff you provide for the community, and definitely between the shout outs and stuff, we've heard a lot about what you do, so definitely appreciate that. So thank you
both for being here. And how did you, I know off air we discussed it, but mm-hmm. how did you hear about American Grown Podcast?
So I heard through Bruce Lindsay and Shayna, I forget her last name right now, so she'll probably kick me later, but it's McDonald. Yeah,
yep.
There you go.
I knew you'd get it.
I met through, I did a little farmer's camp, and I met Bruce there. He came to Glen Hope Farm. I did a little kids camp there for veterans kids, and then we opened up to the public, too. We had like 30-some kids there. It was great.
Wow.
I met Bruce there. He showed up through interceding. Started talking about interceding. I was like, are you a farmer, like planting?
Right, that's where my mind went.
Originally, I was like, oh, you guys want to do farm stuff? Got it.
Cool,
you
know? Yeah,
But no, they don't do that at all. But they do work with people, and they want to make a nice big hub, per se, which I think we're trying to get rid of the word the hub, just mm-hmm. so it doesn't sound like a spaceship type of thing. But talking through them, met Shayna. We had a good meeting through interceding, and then they said about the podcast, hey, did you listen to it? And I was like, okay, yeah. And then I did, and then it seemed like it was like three parts or something on there.
Yeah, it was a long one.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a lot of good stuff that you were covering. So yeah. I was like, man, I got to try to get on there. And Bruce was like, yeah, we got to get you on there too. So and then I seen you post the application to be on the show and stuff through Facebook. And I was like, this is awesome. So I just applied, and then, you know, here I am. But then, of course, got me, like, reviewing all your other guests and stuff, which, I mean, you've had a lot of awesome people tell a lot of good stories and stuff. So
yeah, it's inspirational. Thank you. It's a lot of different backgrounds. And I try to make sure each episode is either entertaining or educational or mm-hmm. inspiring in some way, you know. And, the amount of guests and people that have filled out the form and I'm meeting for the first time, like y'all, you know, it's pretty neat to see. And I think everyone has a story. And, you know, some people will be like, oh, I'm not that interesting. And it's like, well, you don't know that because there's people that are doing completely different things than you. And maybe you're an airplane mechanic. Maybe you're a veteran. You know, maybe you started a nonprofit. Maybe you're a business owner and you sell tires. You know, who knows? But people will find that interesting. So that's kind of why I started the American Grown podcast. And shout out to, you know, to Bruce, Bruce Lindsay and Shana. You guys are phenomenal. So thank you. But you brought with you a pup. Tell us a little bit about the service dog here. And for the listeners, if you hear some different sounds, we have a live animal in the studio.
So briefly, and then I can let Brittany talk because she knows the breed a lot more than me because she has the breed. So he's a German Shorthaired Pointer. That's him smelling the boom mic right there. So he's a German Shorthaired Pointer, which typically isn't the best dog for service work, for example, but they have one of the best noses for odor detection. So we're like, you know what? Why not? Why not try it? And the temperament and everything's there, selected from all the puppies that they had. And he's an outstanding citizen as far as when it comes to the evaluations and things that I did for service work. And it's pretty a lengthy thing, and we're doing a co-fostering thing, so that way he gets a different routine in two different households, but also establishing the same communication there. And we have his books in there too, honestly, if you like wanted to look through it at some point. But we're documenting everything as we go through. What he likes, what he doesn't like, how the communication is effective, because we just use a slip lead collar that has a cord lock on both sides, and it's literally a pressure collar just to communicate real simple things, and he's doing really good with it. He's about, 13, 14 weeks now?
15 weeks today, I think.
15 weeks today. So he's going to go to a veteran in New York. And this is our first dog that we're doing outside of Pennsylvania. Oh, so wow. If we can establish that proof of concept, we're going to do videos, things like that. And then those people are going to come back for public access, obedient tests, things like that. So then we can certify, maintain the training, make sure everything on their end is good. Because task training is really big for a dog. Because you want a dog that knows how to actually mitigate your disabilities, enhance your life. You don't want your dog to hinder it. And you want them to provide not just a couple tasks. I think ADA standard is at least 2 tasks, for example. So it's like, oh, how about we do 5 tasks? How about we do 8?
Wow. You know, raise the bar.
Yeah, I mean, and I could teach it confidently, you know, well over 80-some tasks to several dogs, or not several dogs, but several hundred dogs that I've worked with so far. And it's all uniquely based off the person's disabilities. You could teach your dog to do anything. You have your run-of-the-mill ones, you know, like post, guard, you know, there's a whole avenue there that you can get into, but I want a dog that's going to help me, you know, do a lot of things. So this veteran that he's getting, what is his name?
Damien.
So Damien, hopefully he minds me kind of sharing some things here, but mainly with mental illness and a psychiatric dog. You have a dog that you want to be chill, relaxed. When you take them places, the dog's not going to be overstimulated. Like, this dog's just chilling, you know?
Very chill,
I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of go into it, but you want the dog to, like, alert you for certain things when you're getting stressed, when you have anxiety. It's important. Like, even if you have, like, any of your listeners that have dogs, it's like the moment that you're stressed, you're freaked out, you're yelling at your spouse, or you're beating your kid, right?
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Right.
If your dog interrupts you, like, take it for what it is. Your dog is telling you in some way.
They sense it. They know, right?
Can you chill out? Hey, you know, they're up your ass, like, when you're doing something and you're just stressed out doing a paper or whatever, you know, whatever stressful situation. Mm-hmm. It's like, just acknowledge that. And your dog's actually doing stuff. It doesn't have to be a service dog. Like, your dog is doing stuff naturally.
Yeah.
Which is great. But you have to realize that. You have to recognize that. You want to talk about the breed a little bit?
Sure. Like Devin said, he's a German short hair pointer. He is 15 weeks old today. So we have a good amount of experience with the breed. My husband actually got into a lot of the breed-specific things. They're bird dogs, so they're in the sporting.
Okay.
In the sporting group. We also have two golden retrievers. So, along with our pointers that we don't hunt with, but one of our, well, I guess both of the pointers were registered into the program to start training. They are, as a breed, you know, people. With service dogs, people think a lot of times, I think their first thought goes to labs or retrievers, which are mm-hmm. mild-mannered, very chill, kind of very versatile. You know, you see those as therapy dogs. I know we have reading dogs at school that are at our kids' elementary school that are retrievers. So pointers are a little bit more intense. They're very intelligent because they're bird dogs, hunting dogs. But this guy was very chill. He was the one of the litter that was very calm, kind of didn't get into the roughhousing too much, okay. even when they were all together. So he just has...
Look at him just chilling there.
Yep. He just has more of a calm demeanor, which is great for service work. So even though... you know, he is a breed that's a little bit more intense. They're highly intelligent. Our pointers are very in tune. Like Devin said, you know, even just your household dogs, you know, they're in tune with you. They know, they recognize stress. You know, if your dog comes up to snuggle with you on the couch, like they did that, not necessarily because they're getting comfort for it, but so, you know, they're in tune with how you feel and what's going on situationally. So right now as a puppy, he's getting a lot of exposure to new situations, desensitizing pretty much any new situation that we can expose him to, you know, from, you know, construction at our houses and
yes, right.
You know, the noises that come from those types of machines to he's been at every single football practice, so is getting a lot of experience with, you know, crowds of people and
right, which I imagine that can be difficult, you know, especially large crowds and a lot of people, and they want to. And I don't mean to cut you off, Brittany, but I imagine, you know, I know when I see a puppy dog, I want to pet them, you know, I want to interact with them. But a service dog, you're not supposed to. It's more
Typically you want to do 9 months is kind of like the rule of thumb, but really it depends on the level of training and the pace of the dog. And PACE is like, there's like an acronym for it.
Okay.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but literally it's exactly what it sounds like. So if this dog and the pace of how it communicates with you, how it's receiving the training, hey, go as fast as you can, right? Within controlled limits. But a puppy, you know, initially you're only going to get about 40-minute training session out because they're going to grow. They're going to sleep.
Yeah.
They're going to eat shit. I mean, just right. like a kid, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're mentally stimulated, you get very exhausted, and that's exactly what this dog does. You know, it does training, you do walking, healing, you start working some odor detection, you start doing all this stuff, and the dog's like, I'm exhausted, I'm just going to take a break. And then they sleep for an hour or two, and they're like, hey, let's do it all over again, you know.
They're ready to go.
But typically, like, especially a dog that, let's say, doesn't show good signs with people initially, or if they're feared or they're scared, 100%. Hey, we got to expose you to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We're going to have people pet you and you're going to like it. Right. A lot of dogs warm up to it, but really it all depends on where they came from. If it came like right from the house, like cool, like you can establish that. Like some of those puppies, for example, some of them were like very confident, you know, you just kind of like rattle the table or shake the cage. Okay. Who's running to me towards that sound?
Okay.
Who's in the back? It's just chilling. Like, I don't know what that is. I don't want to come over there, right? You want a nice, curious dog because then you could channel that drive. You could channel a lot of
that energy. Take that energy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then you want to make them think it's their idea that they're doing it. So it's just like a kid cleaning the room. Like, no, I don't want to clean the room. But then somehow you could have that incentive in there.
Make it fun somehow. Yeah, right. Incentive,
like,
right?
Yeah, otherwise. I clean my room. And then before you know it, it turns into a habit, right?
Yes.
It's a natural thing. And then the dog's like loving it. It's like, yeah, you know. Like, obviously, bird dog, right? Well, not going to be really doing bird dog stuff, but you could do it on the side, right?
Yeah.
You know, but between odor, between searching, finding things, I mean, that's what the dog's going to really naturally love to do. But also, GSPs are definitely, they're cuddle dogs, 100%. Yeah. and then I'm sure people, you know, you'll start seeing it in your algorithm just talking about it, because that's how, you know, that's how our phones listen.
Social media works. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I forget what we're getting on. Oh, yeah, so 9 months is the rule of thumb.
Okay.
And then start cutting it off as far as, like, the social interaction with people, with them touching, right?
Mm-hmm.
But before that, yeah, like, hey, go ahead, touch my dog. But it's important that you always advocate for your dog,
mm-hmm.
Because of the aspect of you don't want to just trust everybody and, you know, and their mother as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see that shady person, they want, no, we're good, you know.
Right.
But you want kids, you want older people. They all have different smells to them. They have different vibes, you know, energy about them, right? And I like Cesar Millan, but then I don't, right? But I do like the fact energy is very big.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a person with great energy, hey, yeah, let's keep it going. But you want that dog to also recognize somebody that maybe is a little weird, right? Or awkward,
yeah,
right? Whether they have mental disabilities or whatever. Okay. But you want to see naturally what's going to trigger your, you know, this dog specifically, like, okay, cool, how is he going to handle that?
Mm.
Like, this kid is really handsy, you know, like, this person pulled at his neck. His, like, okay, you allow it to an extent, but you're like, I want to see it. Is my dog going to growl, snap, like, do all these warning signs? Like, oh, no, they're chill with everything. They're accepting it. They're mm-hmm. tolerating a lot. Like, that's amazing. So usually 9 months, you cut that off, and then you start more deliberate control and, like, okay, cool. Now you're not going to be able to see everybody because it's just me, you. You're going to bond.
Yes,
And then you allow them to a point, like, okay, now you can pet, like, somebody asks, right?
Right.
Because then you're teaching that as a, that's a resource, like, oh, just like food, water, toys, treats, anything.
Anything.
It's like, oh, a person is a resource for dogs because they love praise, right? Golden Retriever, that's freaking what they are, man.
Oh, 100%.
You know,
yeah.
Golden Retriever Lab, like, listen, if you can control that and harness that, like, hey, they will do anything in the world for you. And it's like, okay, can I go play with them now? You know, can I go lick their arm, or can I get pet by them right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
And I think the fact that we're able to, I mean, the household that he's going to has, they have kids, they have sports, and one of the things that they identified as a want or a need from the service dogs was support going to places where there are crowds, going to kids' sporting events, which are loud, chaotic, and so being able to expose him to those types of scenarios now will better help support Damien being able to, you know, go to his kids' sporting events, which is important.
Oh, for sure. So Gunnar has a lot of pressure on him. I mean, first pup going out of state, right? So he's got to represent, mm-hmm. Going to Damien and his family. You know, you mentioned, Devin, two things. I think it was post and guard. For the listeners, What do those mean? I have no clue. Like, what's post and what's guard?
Yeah. So, at some point I'll let you look at the book. That way you can probably ask some questions from that too. But how we're documenting, but those are like some of the real simple tasks that your dog can provide for you. And you want to have a task, and you want to start teaching a dog those tasks when they have basic obedience done. They have good communication. They have a good focus, and they want to work for you is really the key. You want to force a dog to do things they don't want to do, right?
Yeah.
So if that tail's not wagging, like, hey, take a break, you know,
break
out the monotony of your training, have fun, because like I said, you're trying to redirect the brain to, like, hey, this is what I want to do. So you're like redirecting what they want into something fun. That way they just won't feel like it's a chore, right? So post is something, it's more or less navigating your dog in a way. And if you have social anxiety or anything like that, you're making it known, right? So your dog's going to be in the heel position, which is generally traditionally to your left. If they have a certain disability, then it'll be to the right as well. It's all unique to that person. But mm-hmm. in this case, your dog will be on the left in a good heel position. You're going to say, Gunner, post, and then he'll come directly straight out in front of you. And he's pretty much going to do a horizontal post up in front of you, and then that way you can say, hey, you put your arm out traditionally, hey, this is my service dog, he is currently working, please step back, right? Mm-hmm. You can do it the opposite way too, where you are in front of the dog as well. It's a lot of different aspects there, but usually people feel confident if you personally have social anxiety and stuff to have your dog in front of you.
Makes sense, yeah.
And now if it's the other way where, no, you like you have good confidence, sure. Okay, you could do it the opposite way too. Like mm-hmm. now you're in front of the dog. No, please step away from my dog. I don't want you over here, right? So yeah. if you're going to come over after, it's 9 months and one day, no. I don't think so, right?
Right.
Unless it's in a controlled, deliberate manner, right? Guard is something that's really easy to teach. It's from the heel, but now, okay, let's say it's heeling from the left side. Now the dog's on the right side, but they're facing your rear, right? So they're covering your back. They're watching your six.
Okay.
And you can do that in a million different ways, right? So there's not a set traditional sense to this, but typically the dog is to your rear, facing your rear somehow. A lot of times people have them in the middle of their legs and they're facing out, or they're just laying there, they're facing out. But a guard, it's good to make it controlled. So, okay, cool. Gunner guard, he'll come across from like that post sense. Mm-hmm. Now he's to your right side, facing your rear. And then the easiest example for this is if you're doing something, let's say you're looking at a book, looking at your favorite whiskey or wine or whatever, right? And if you have that social anxiety, if you're at an ATM, right, your dog yes. has the ability to alert you in some ways, right? Usually if you have you should have a lead on, right? Your dog, you'll feel the lead tighten. The dog will get up and move. Or sometimes, your dog can bark in certain cases. But they're going to alert you like, hey, somebody's coming up behind you. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. I see that. Thank you so much, right?
Yeah.
And then you're just acknowledging it. Hey, thanks for letting me know. And then you go back to doing what you're doing. Your dog's still alerting you. They should not be aggressive by any means, right? Because you're right. not teaching a production dog. But it's just a real quick, hey, somebody's coming behind you. That's easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are really easy ones. Like tapering give is the biggest one that I like, especially for a dog that likes to have things in its mouth, right?
Sporting dogs do. Okay. They're right, very right. mouthy. They carry anything and everything around.
Okay.
Yeah, which you want to try to control that and harness that aspect, because if you want your dog to grab pill bottles that you drop on the floor, things like that, especially keys, because keys are something – dogs don't like natural, like metallic, metal tasting things. I found out Noir. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's perfect with it because he grabbed a couple beer cans out of my thing and took it to the bottom side of the yard. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? I was like, oh, he must like metal in his mouth, right? But you can tailor a lot of things. Like you could take a lanyard, put those on your keys. I put a beer koozie on so that he doesn't puncture it as much. But
right.
But tapering give is very important for, hey, you want your towel out of the shower. Hey. Noir, take, okay, bring, all right, give, thank you so much. You drop something. It's supposed to help enhance your life, right?
Right.
So if you have issues bending over or anything like that, you want to use your dog for mobility. It helps out a lot for your dog to be able to retrieve something for you. I have a client, she has POTS, which is like it's a posterior like regulation of your blood, I believe. It has to do with your heart. But when you get up or move in certain situations, you get so dizzy where you pass out.
Oh, geez. Okay.
I'm sure you can like look up that acronym like a little bit more into detail. But
yeah.
The biggest thing is we got her dog. Okay, cool. Her dog opens up, which Cream Retriever is like my favorite dog. I don't know why, but they're amazing. But her dog is able to her name is River. River's able to open up the refrigerator, grab a bottle of salt water, which is obviously good, once you pass out and with that type of condition,
mm-hmm.
And then like, you're good to go. Like she can open up the fridge, shut the fridge, like do all this cool stuff. But I mean, you tailor to whatever, right? But as a puppy, we want to establish all of that because we don't know if Damien's going to have things in the future or whatever, right? Cause this is an investment. You're looking at about 2 years worth of training, to go into a dog like that. So, but tapering game is fun because it should be a fun thing too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you want a dog to retrieve, not just go out, look at the ball and be like, all right, I'm going to come back. Right.
Right.
But you start out with it fun and then you start doing different textures in their mouth,
mm-hmm.
Different ways, different exposures, like dogs that are more distracted in those environments. They tend to drop things easy, or when they come up to you, they drop it. It's like, no, hold on to it. Right. So, and there's tons of methods on how to hold on to something for a longer duration, like, hey, pick up my cane that's metal versus a wooden cane,
that's a good
right?
point, right.
So, I mean, yeah, I can go into lots of detail about that. So
that's amazing. Cool. I mean, because I think, you think of our pets, whether it's cats or dogs, but, they fetch a ball and that's kind of it. But you, in 2 years, you can really train them and hone their skills to do so much more. And like I said, to really help advance the person's life. And even just, you know, a lot of veterans I've had on the show, and they suffer from PTSD and anxiety and such, high stress, and just having someone that's watching your six. Because I've had active and like I said, veterans on that have said one of the hardest things coming back home, you know, is that there isn't anybody really watching your six. You know, it's just the locked door where over, you know, when they're overseas, there's a whole team of people, you know, armed and watching your six. So it's awesome that you're providing this service to the people that need it the most, the people that are serving us.
Yeah, and just to touch on that as well as like, also you can have your dog, because there's a lot of people that have anxieties on their house. Like I know I did initially coming back from my deployments, and it's like, okay, cool. Instead of clearing rooms when you walk in your door, it's like, now I got to make sure like everything is clear. And it's very annoying. It's very taxing, but you can easily have your dog, hey, go search. And then all of a sudden they're searching your house. Hey, it's clear. They'll come back to you. If there's somebody there, then obviously you can set up the scenario. It's like, okay, you know, there's somebody in the bathroom, and then your dog just sits there and barks. You know, it lets you know, hey, somebody's here.
Something's up, yeah.
Somebody's going, you know, somebody's in your house, wow. Per se, right? But that's for people that do have a lot of those paranoia aspects of like, no, like, I'm tired of checking all the rooms and the doors, you know, even though you locked them, you shut all of them, you know. But you can just have your dog, they could take a lot off your plate, we'll say. But you just got to utilize it for what it is. But it does take time to do that. So the quality of the dog has to do with that. So some dogs have different drives. There's like three different types of drives for like shepherds, for example, but it's all really the same thing. But you want a dog that's versatile in kind of everything. But that 2-year mark, it's like, your dog should be very, very versed with a lot of things. But some dogs takes longer. It's fine.
It takes time.
And there's nothing wrong with that either.
But 2 years is normally the you know, after 2 years, they got a lot of that stuff figured out. Let's take a quick sip break, and when we pick back up, I want to talk about you know, your childhood and growing up, and your service, your deployment. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. Good boy. Oh, look at that. Okay. All right, that way I have it. But we're going to get pictures at the end in front of the flag and everything. That's just what we do. But thank you so much. These are for me?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I got a swag shelf out there. I'll put these on. That's so cool. Okay. We're good? We'll pick back up. Okay. Good. So, yeah, to pick back up... Devin, I want to get your background, and then Brittany will do the same, and then how you two kind of met and started, you know, Frontline Companions, and then Devin, how you got into canine services. But yeah, let's get your background as far back as you want to go, as much as you want to share.
Oh, Lord. Well, I'll sum up a lot of things, but childhood was a little insane. Apparently, it was traumatic when you talk to, like, Children's Youth Services, you know, but to me, it was, like, the best times of my life because it was real simple, right?
Yeah.
But moving forward, like, couldn't live with my mom anymore. Like, we were camping in Pincho Park, living there for a couple years. And then Children's Youth found out, type of thing. Me and my brother, sister kind of got separated. Went to temporary foster care, got back into custody, things like that. But in the end, got into foster care. You know, my sister got adopted at some point, which was good for her. And then me and my brother were just kind of hanging out. And then when I got, yet again, I'm skating through a lot of things here, but, that kind of led me into high school, between doing sports and things like that. I got into like a JRTC program there in Dallastown. Love that program. Got into like shooting and things like that. Matthew Corwin, he's actually the commandant for the Marine Corps League. I guess they're attached to like Shiloh Legion, stuff like that. So, and he's really heavy into volunteering with the vet network and things like that.
Okay.
The outreach and everything. So he was my mentor throughout high school, and then I got really involved with shooting. I was really good at shooting. I was like naturally ranked for air rifle.
Yeah.
And then eventually just kind of led me into like obviously the appeal to go to the military. And then when I got pretty much into the military, when I graduated, I went right away I started out at Fort Lewis. It was Fort Lewis 2012 in the very beginning until like 2015. I'm just getting through timelines here, but led me to a deployment in 2016. And then coming back from that led to me getting out. But during that time, I was infantry pretty much my entire career. I was mechanized first, then led into like more of a LRS type of situation for a little short stint, which is long range reconnaissance.
Okay.
And then kind of went from there to light infantry, and then light infantry is just you have no vehicles, you just get dropped off by Blackhawks, and that's just your life. And then from there, went on a deployment for the Afghan withdrawal into support of it and things like that, and that's where I was reclassed to 88 November, so 11 Bravo to 88 November, which is Transportation Management Coordinator, and I love that, job, but dealing with management of pushing everything to Trans-Arabian Network, through the TAN, managing cargo and just kind of tracking all that stuff, and then between like the withdrawal and everything else, kind of previous to that, I was involved like in IED, which, part of the convoy and everything, using white assets, things like that, which is a non-military entity, right? A player in the game that you're contracted out. So they're like Turkish drivers.
Okay.
Like just a whole bunch of ethnicities, we'll say. So it was, that's why we use them essentially, but, we're traveling through, an MSR, main supply route. It was washed out, due to the rainy season. And then during that rainy season, we take an ASR, which is your alternate supply route. And there's several of them out there. And then all of a sudden that's like when we hit the IED, it was like 175 pounds,
holy shit.
Which typically like would level, well, not typically, it will take an entire highway out. But luckily, a lot of our transport was all tanks and stuff. And I was kind of in the rear of the formation, but we had pretty much Marines were our security at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We're very lucky that, 100,000 pound plus, I don't even know what a tank weighs anymore, but
yeah.
But they took all the kinetic energy, essentially. I believe 12 drivers were killed out of that, but they're all people from, other countries and stuff. And I think four, including myself, were on the injured list for that IED and kind of went from there,
Wow.
And I don't know, I'm just like skating around everywhere. So if you could redirect me a little bit.
No, I was going to say, if you don't mind, I'd like to back up a little bit because that was a lot. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for your service. But to back up, you were very good. You mentioned a very good shooter. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that stemmed from?
I don't know.
A lot of hunting growing up or just natural?
So like I had a good mentor growing up. I would say his name's Chad McLean. I mean, he lives in Glen Rock. I still talk to him. He's good, like my father figure, I would say. He kind of showed me everything I need to know about hunting, essentially, initially, because I needed some good hobbies, especially being in the houses that I was and stuff. And between sports and stuff, I kind of got involved into that. And freaking rabbit hunting was the first thing that I got into. And
you took to it like official.
Yeah,
war,
it was him and another gentleman. I believe his name was Ferg. He had like 9 beagles and he bred those things. And
wow.
And that's really why I love dogs in general too. But just to watch a dog work and then they're working stuff out to you like rabbits and things like that. And I just kind of stuck with it really ever since. But I like the idea of it.
Okay.
And
then from there, you're joining the Army. There was that always, was the Marines or Navy or any of that in your sights, or was always the Army?
The insane thing, because it was a Marine Corps JRDC, I went to the Marines first, and I was diehard. They have 11 general orders. Like, I don't remember any of those, right? But the Army has 3, and I was like, man, that sounds a little bit easier, But I memorized those 11. And I was ready to be a Marine. And then I had like double jointed shoulders or something.
Okay.
So the Navy, the medical doctors at MEPS, they they denied me. Like, I had to get a waiver and stuff. And because the Marines are a department of the Navy, well, that's kind of no-go for both ends. And then I walked up right over to the Army recruiter. I'm like...
Yeah, what'd they say?
I was like, motherfucker, like... They're like, yeah, well, come on in.
Come
like,
on in, let's go, yeah, okay.
It, literally, it was like a pencil whip, and then I was in. I was like, what the heck, man?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, they didn't want to fight for me over there, you know?
Yeah, but, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, and honestly, I wanted to be a Cav Scout, which is, I'm so happy I did not, because infantry and Cav Scout, there's a big rivalry there.
Okay.
And Cav Scouts are just, I don't know, they're garbage.
Okay. What I don't know, Cav Scout, describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, infantrymen, right? I mean, essentially, depending on what level you are, what, you know, tier operator, whatever the heck you want to call it, and what type of unit you're in, whether you're mechanized, light, airborne, air assault, whatever, like, we'll just say you're a door kicker, you're a grunt.
Okay.
That's going to go out, you're going to assault the objective, secure it, all that type of thing. Cav Scout, they just think that they're the same. You know, but they do more, I guess, more of a recon aspect of it. So they kind of watch from afar or whatever. But sometimes they do the same thing. Like, yeah. I've been attached to Cav units. We're doing the same freaking job. But the biggest thing is that's kind of annoying is just they wear cowboy hats and Stetsons and things like that. And
okay.
I'm like, you guys look goofy as hell, you know.
to each their own, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but regardless, you know, just to poke fun a little bit, but right. Yeah, I'm still happy I never went into that realm because opportunity is different between the branches and the Army, like, you know, has the best opportunities, I feel, because they have the most jobs and you can go any which way you want to go. And, you know, I definitely took advantage of those things. So it's like, heck, you know, the sky's the limit, you know?
Yes.
But the Marines are very restricted. The Navy, Air Force, you know, they choose a lot of things for you.
Okay.
It's very competitive to do certain things because it's a smaller, it's either a smaller branch or they rely off of pride and all this other stuff, which I do appreciate. Marines definitely have more pride in their uniform and rules and regulations. Army, it's like if we hear the bell, you know, or the reveille go off and you're supposed to stand there, like, granted, I would always get out of the vehicle or whatever and you would salute. You know, when until that's over. But then you got to the point where, you know, you're a decade in or more, you're like, shit. Like, and then you're just diving into your car real quick.
Right.
And, you know, and because, you know, either you love your country a lot, like, right. But I mean, there's a little stupid little traditions, like people either love them or hate them, but Marines, like, you will see them 100%. Like they love that shit.
They're all in.
Drilling ceremony. Like they love that stuff, which is great. You know, like I appreciate that, but I do not.
Yeah.
I just like to, you know, like to serve my country and be a patriot in a lot of other ways.
So now, 2016, to fast forward a little bit, you mentioned 2016 was maybe your first deployment or one of the first?
Yeah. So that was like Syria and a bunch of other things involved there. But between there, I would say 2018 to 2020-ish, it's really... I have like mixed feelings with a lot of that stuff, but I won't touch too much on that.
Okay.
I
was going to ask if you wanted to share, you know, more in depth about, you know, your deployment, because obviously, you know, the average Joe, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of civilians don't know. So I didn't know if you wanted to share any of that.
Stroke, right? So between Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq, without too many timelines going through, just a generalized, you know, Syria is a very new thing, you know, on my deployment. And then, you have to establish a lot of things there, push a lot of Syrian refugees, right?
Well, mm-hmm.
a lot of those refugees were not refugees. Like we forced them out of their homes to clear for one of the first airfields there. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like very conflicting with a lot of things. So that's where I don't like to talk too much about that, but
yeah.
But then you lead into like between the Afghan withdrawal and things like that, like COVID was a big thing during that.
That's true.
And it was very difficult to, like, you had to wear a mask.
Did you have to wear a mask over there?
You had to wear a mask. You know, they did force you to get the vaccine and all this stuff. Like, you don't know what the hell is going on. But then when you're about to come home after, you know, almost a whole year of a deployment, they're like, yeah, you have to get this vaccine or whatever, right? Or,
yeah.
Or, hey, you're laid up into a hospital. Like, you have to get this vaccine just while you're here at a convenience, you know? So, I mean, there's a lot involved there. But I think the culture itself between those deployments is like, you appreciate, you know, America like 1,000 times more than what is actually you see over there. But just between like the poverty level is very drastic. How people drive are just insane.
Yeah.
And if they do have a car, right. But you know, between seeing like wild animals, camels, dogs, like all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, cats, I mean, you see all this stuff, but they're just living different lives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But between like actually being engaged with people, trying to actually do your job, it just makes it very complicated. But I love that. I love that. The complication aspect was good because it made time go by really, really quick.
Quick.
Not sure what else you want to hear about that.
No. Kind of the last question, kind of you covered or talked about, you know, the withdrawal, right, from mm-hmm. Afghanistan. And I know, I don't know if you're a big podcast listener, but there's a podcast called The Sean Ryan Show. If you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend it. And for the listeners out there, phenomenal. And he interviews top military and CIA, FBI and all that. But one of the people he had on was somebody that was in the Afghan withdrawal. And of course, I can't remember the name, but that was kind of, if I could say bluntly, it sounds like a shit show.
Yeah.
From an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, I could speak on that.
If you don't mind. So, I mean, yeah.
I mean, when you look at a logistics perspective on things, and I'm not sure if he covered it, and I haven't listened to it, but I will now, so thanks. But you always have to write stuff off, right, to justify it in a way, right? And during that time, we told our senior leaders, right, and I'm not sure if you have any supporters out there that like these people, but I don't care anyway. But General Milley, piece of shit, and Lloyd Austin, piece of shit. We've expressed to them from the very beginning to the end, hey, this is too fast, this is too quick, we don't have the logistics to do this. But they just, you know, they told the president at that time, you know, old Sleepy Joe,
they told him, hey,
and then nothing happened from there. So we warned a lot of things. To tell those high level advisors, which I'm sure hopefully they would address that a little bit on their podcast too, but like nothing was done with it. It's like, oh, just continue operations. And that's all you got to do. I mean, no matter what, the next day, like something's going to move, something's going to get contracted out.
Yeah.
You got to look at the vessels that you're using, what type of aircraft you're using. I mean, obviously there's like no rail system really that we were utilizing or whatever, but all the convoys, like there was a main person in Turkey that owned all the trucks and the vehicles. So it's like very monopolized how they were doing certain things. And then, you know, it was just crazy. But in Kabul itself, because once Bagram was shut down, then, you know, we started realizing, oh my God, like there's a lot of shit here. Right.
Yeah.
And then at Kabul, like there's so much stuff left over.
At Kabul, was that the only airstrip at Kabul? Or I'm trying to remember.
I think there was, when I was there, I was only like the one section of it.
Okay.
But just how it was shaped. But in Kabul, yeah, I mean, that's like the main one there. And then you have Bagram. And then when you get to Iraq, you have like Al-Asad, Erbil. You have those locations. So it's really logistically like, that was kind of like the less or okay. whatever was left. Right.
Yeah.
And between like the GP mediums, like all the structures that were there, like, I'm not even sure if they cut power and stuff and then just cut sling load or something. But, Kabul itself, like we had all this stuff left over. We're throwing white phosphorus in vehicles that we couldn't sign over technically. Right. So like,
just to destroy it.
Yeah. Yeah. We were destroying all of this government Jeez. Property stuff. Right. And then to justify
Millions
all
of
it,
bro.
Billions of dollars, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after all of that, you have there, you're sitting there, and I didn't physically do it. Somebody did, but regardless, the process was, okay, cool. We're gonna sign all this equipment to you to the Afghan Army. Well, the president already fled at that point. We knew he was gone. He left with his money.
Yeah.
Now, granted, a lot of this is speculation, but I've seen what I've seen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Afghan president was gone. He took the money and ran. We gave everything over to the soldiers, which was like whoever was his advisor was like left, right? And then once we signed everything over, we're like, okay, we're done. Like, we're going to wipe our hands clean.
Yeah.
But that was our way to justify, okay, cool, we're going to give them what they need to fight the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, you know, And well, the other side note, ISIS fucking hates Al Qaeda and the Taliban. Like, they hate each other.
Okay.
They hate each other very, like, drastically. So
didn't
like
know that.
Not,
yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, Syria was like big with ISIS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Al Qaeda and or even the Taliban and other entities. We'll say we're getting intel from Russia telling us where ISIS was. And all this other crazy shit.
Wow.
And it's like, what the hell? But then we're not going to utilize them for the Taliban. But, well, because Russia, they have a weird thing with the Taliban or whatever. But they keep playing sides with everything. But once we sign everything over, then you're left with wiping your hands clean. And then even though we know, hey, this person left, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, all of the soldiers and everything. And I'm not sure if you've seen, like, images of, like, the airport and how that looked and stuff. It just turned into chaos, like, once we did that.
Yes. Yeah.
And then after that is done, it's like, I don't know, that's just how I guess that's how we justify just leaving everything, because we can just write it off like it's a little blank check. But they fell right into, the Taliban because...
Right, without good leadership.
They weren't paid.
Yeah.
They weren't paid.
Okay.
Because there's no money.
Right.
What is a soldier going to do, you know, out of free stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But one thing that was amazing was, you know, the women, obviously their rights were being impacted, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're the ones that they picked up, you know, they picked up AKs. They picked up stuff to try to defend against, you know... the Taliban coming back.
Wow.
But I mean, yet again, they just didn't have the support that they needed.
They needed,
I mean, we could have gave them a lot of support, but yet again, to try to justify over 20 years, like, you know, through enduring freedom and everything like that, it's like, it's insane. It's just all for nothing.
That's what I mean. It just seemed rushed and leaving all the equipment and the gear or destroying it. And then, yeah, seeing the videos on the news and the images, which, you know, we can't always trust the news, you know, let's be honest there. But to see, like, the airfield and people running after the, you know, these big airplanes they're about to take off. It just seemed very not the right way to do something, you know, not the right way to do something at all.
Yeah, and I can't disclose too much in some aspects, but as far as the units that were there, like my cousin was actually even there for a short time too.
Oh, wow.
It was cool because like as I was like almost leaving, like I seen him coming in, but he was with the 82nd. And the 82nd was there for that big support element for Kabul. And there's like a big engineering unit that was there too from the 82nd that I worked with. But the Marines were the ones really, I mean, they're holding it down like drastically over there. But the Army presence was like almost zero. I was so surprised.
Wow.
I mean, we had people, a lot of people, you know, between Kuwait and Iraq still. But it was just so odd, you know. I'm not sure who was making those decisions.
Now, when you were there, and I'm not sure if it was at Kabul or whatnot, but if I remember correctly, because I remember seeing on the news and such, there was an attack at the gate.
Yeah, that was a car bombing, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah,
I think it was a car bombing. I can't remember how many citizens it killed, but I wasn't there specifically on that day. I was... afterwards, more or less.
Okay.
After that happened, but yeah, I mean, it was.
It's just wild.
It was insane.
You know, you run it up the chain of command. You think you'd get some kind of response, you know, and because the sounds like the warning signs are there. Hey, this isn't the right way to do things. We're rushing it. Now you mentioned that you were in a convoy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And an IED went off. 100. We say like 170 some pound.
Yeah, 175. IED. Yeah.
And the blunt of that was the tank, but yet you still got hurt yourself, and others did.
Yeah.
Pick up from there, and then we'll continue and get Brittany involved in how you met her and everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for part two next week. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors. A&M Pizza, authentic Italian food made with the finest quality ingredients. Proudly serving the Lebanon and Lancaster area since 1980. Stop by their Campbelltown location today. You'll be happy you did. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.